Welcome to SMQBs. This is episode 6. Today, we're going to go right to the legend of Tiger Woods, look back on his historic career, talk about how he changed golf and the PGA, and then try to figure out if there's anybody on the tour who can live up to the standard that he set. We'll move into the NBA then and talk a little NBA midseason awards, maybe make some predictions, talk NBA logo and if it should be changed. And of course, we wrap with punchable face of the week, a soccer player calling out LeBron. Let's see how that works out. Have some fun. Enjoy.
Tired of the same old sports analysis? Then you need the SMQBs podcast. They're 5 attorneys, they're sports fanatics, and they're ready to make their case. Welcome to Sports Talk with an Edge. From Dallas, Texas, Ryan Pope. Michael Brewster Phelan from Richmond, Virginia. Patrick Milk Michler from Tampa. Toby House Milrod from Philadelphia. Chris Bison Nace from DC.
SMQB's next episode. How many minutes into it before Rooster makes us slap the explicit label on this episode? Over under at 5. Hey
we'll
guys,
take the under.
What's going on? How's everybody?
Good to see
all
you.
Right, all
good
right, all right, everybody.
Everybody.
The Knicks are over 500, baby.
Celebrating in the streets of New York.
The world celebrates.
Mm-hmm. Moral Victory Championship Parade.
Another participation trophy.
And you know that I particularly love participation trophies. That is moral victories.
I hearken back to last year's baseball season when certain teams were hovering around 500 and people in Philadelphia were thrilled.
Hey, that's a big win for us these days to get to 500 in baseball. But we're not ready for baseball yet. What are we talking about this week, fellas?
Yeah, what are we talking?
Let's go.
Well, let me kick it off because we almost had another Kobe-like incident this week. I mean, if you didn't have PTSD when you heard earlier this week that there'd been a crash in the LA metro area involving a high paid, very well-known celebrity athlete, then you don't have a pulse. But we found out pretty quickly because it's TMZ. They're the ones that break stories now, not ESPN or any of the other sporting networks. TMZ let us know that Tiger Woods had been in a near fatal crash in Rollingwood Hills, rolled his car a number of times in the morning. He was heading to a taping session. Nobody knew at the time how severe it was going to be. There was thoughts that, you know, it could be potentially life-threatening, that he could have had, you know, critical injuries that resulted in brain damage or spinal cord injury, anything like that. Fortunately, we found out later that day that it was just crush injuries to his lower legs. They're going to have to reconstruct, obviously, his right foot, his right leg, and injuries that you would expect, guys, that would probably be the end of Tiger on a competitive level for the PGA Tour and beyond. Probably we're heading there a little bit already with another back surgery, his fifth earlier in December. And an interview you had with Jim Nance recently at the Riviera where he said he didn't have a timetable for his return. But unfortunately, guys, I don't think Tiger ever is going to return to the form anywhere close to where he was. And it'll be a miracle if he plays another competitive round of golf that we can see. So I think what we do is we kind of have to put him in perspective. As far as what does the PGA world look like if Tiger doesn't come back? Because there's no golfer, obviously, in history that's had a bigger impact. I did a little bit of research to get ready for this pod, and some of the statistics are just staggering on the impact that he's had. And I'm going to turn it over and let you guys talk after I roll out some statistics for you. But in 1996, which was the last year before Tiger came on tour, the total prize money given out for the entire tour that year was $101 million. Mm. The last time that I could find a stat for that was over $370 million on an annual basis. That was sometime 2014 or 15. I don't think it's gone up a whole lot since then, but just think about the impact that's had on the purses. The purses average was 1.5 million in 2000, in 1996, and now it's well over 8 million. You could argue that the two golfers who benefited the most from Tiger Woods were Vijay Singh and Phil Mickelson, because those guys made a mint off of the impact he had on the purses in golf. But the numbers are just staggering when you look at it. 600 golfers now have over $1 million in their pension plans, and 114 have over $3 million in their pension plans. And that is a direct result of the increase in the purses and the ratings power that one Tiger Woods drew. Right now, he's ranked number 53 in the world, and obviously that's his zenith. We'll never see him go above 53, and he's just going to go down from there. But if you put it in perspective, he was number one for 697 weeks, which is 13 years. And he was in the top 10 for 900 weeks, which is over 17 years. So
that's nuts.
We're just never going to see anything like it. And I think, you know, we can put Tiger in perspective all different ways when you look at it, but the impact that he's had on golf and the larger part of the sporting world should be admired.
Well said, Pope.
Very, very well said, Pope. I mean, if you think about it, he was 45 years old with the back of a 75-year-old, and he was still packing the galleries every time he was out. He brought fans to the game that didn't know they were golf fans. He brought minorities to the game. Kids grew up and wanted to be Tiger. I mean, he's irreplaceable, especially with this current group of golfers. I mean, I don't think there is an established golfer right now who has the ability to reach this dominant, iconic status that Tiger and Jack and Arnie had.
You know, I was born in 1970, and growing up until my 20s, there were four major sports and that was it. It really wasn't worth turning on the dial. You might turn on like ABC Wide World of Sports and see something that's like a little off the page, but Tiger Woods came close to creating a fifth major sport. That's how popular he made golf. It became that you were willing to look on the weekends for something other than the four major sports if Tiger was on the leaderboard, which he always was. And, you know, the other thing is, I don't know about you guys, but sometimes when I turn on a game and it's not one of my teams playing, and I'm just deciding whether I'll end up having a rooting interest for somebody or not. Tiger was magnetic. I could not help myself. Every time he showed up on the screen, I wanted his shot to go in. I wanted to see him climb the leaderboard. I got nervous when other people were chasing him. When it was a tie, I was always rooting for Tiger. There was something about his personality. And yes, I mean, we've had these debates in the other sports, and so you'll have Palmer and you'll have Nicklaus and you'll have Player and you'll have Tiger, and statistically you can make comparisons based on championships won and PGA events won. But I think what Pope just laid out, the numbers don't lie. What he brought to the game in money, in ratings, in popularity. I mean, when I first started playing golf and I was going to public courses, it was no problem getting on the course. When Tiger started playing, the courses got busy. The hacks went to the sporting goods store, bought clubs, and just wanted to be like Tiger. I think he's done, sadly. I know in 2019, he put on his Superman cape, and that was one of the greatest spectacles in sports when he won the Masters in 2019. But I can't imagine, with pins and needles and rods and a peg leg being able to pull off the demanding 4-day weekend of golf. But you know, it's a career that will be, I think, unmatched.
Plus, don't forget, he was still recovering from back surgery, which had to have been messed up by this crash.
Well, yeah. I mean, didn't you initially think there was like painkillers involved? I did.
Turns out wasn't, though.
Yeah, right.
Why? I mean, what is the love affair that people have with Tiger? I mean, what was it, or what is it about him? I mean, we've seen dominant players in other sports, and often they're hated by everybody else, right? You know, we don't want to go back to the Tom Brady conversation. We've had that, but Tom Brady is not a fan favorite unless he's playing for your team.
Speak right? for yourself.
Well, I mean, LeBron, people don't love LeBron, although his star is a little brighter now than it was after some, you know, after the decision and all that. But Tiger was the beloved, dominant player who people wanted to see continue dominating. You don't get that very often. Why is that?
Well, I mean, he had it, whatever it is. We always talk about that. Whatever it is, Tiger had it. You know what Phil Knight said, the Nike chairman, when Tiger first turned pro, is he said what Michael Jordan did to basketball, Tiger Woods is about to do to golf.
Yeah.
But, he was larger than life.
Look at the photographs behind you and Milk. He had this exuberance that was electric.
But Nace brings up a good point. Like, and this is like the mystery for myself that I've always, and I've said this for several years, you know, as we were watching the 2019 Masters and my heart was literally like pounding. I think we were texting each other back and forth. Like, is anyone else's heart pounding? But by all indications, we should totally hate this guy. Right. Like,
right.
The fact, not just the fact that he's a great player and we should just not like him because of that, but like he's done some bad stuff off the golf course. There's a lot of evidence out there that we shouldn't like Tiger Woods, nor should we look up to him.
Teflon Tiger.
But for some reason, we're obsessed with him. Like, I long for his success. I have no idea why. It's crazy. He's like the only player I can think of in any sport that I sit there and I'm just like, I really don't care what you do. Like, you, another bad story could probably come. I mean, unless he killed somebody, that I would like ever change. Would I ever start rooting against him? I mean, there were how many bad stories have come out about Tiger? And we're all like, yeah, whatever. Okay.
And along that, and Pope, to your point and everybody's points about the statistics and the way he affected the game and grew its viewership, doesn't it still feel like his career was a little disappointing? I mean, isn't there a twinge of he didn't accomplish everything that we all thought and hoped he would? I mean, I don't think you can look at him and not think, you know, he's not going to end up with the record for majors.
Nope.
That's got to be a disappointment on some level, no?
I hear what you're saying. I mean, I think he was on a trajectory, and we all felt like he was going to smash the record. And I think he got to 13 or 14 and then just stalled out from a series of, you know,
self-inflicted errors
and then – but I got to tell you, I was at that same place that you're talking about where like I'm deciding after all these things and he's made his comeback and he's had some stuff off the course. I remember texting him with you guys as we were all watching 2018 at Eastlake at the Tour Championship. You guys remember how people started to fill in behind him when he was coming up?
Right.
18. Yeah. And I think Bison, you were talking about how you used to live near, you know, Eastlake. That used to be your kind of stomping grounds. And I actually am getting chills now thinking about how people were filling in behind him. And we love in sports the redemption story. We really love the hero who then falls, who then comes back and gets back to the top again. And the people filling in behind him, 2018 at Eastlake, the Tour Championship, that was the completion of the redemption story. And, you know, like Rooster says, that fist pump that's iconic, that's behind Milk right now, you know, that Tiger fist bump after he makes one of these big putts and walks it in, that's what got people going. Because, you know, golf was about the golf clap. you know, mm-hmm. and whispering on television about the play. Tiger made you want to get out of your seat and like break through the barrier of golf and cheer like a regular sport.
Yeah.
That's a become good one of those losers who yelled, "You the man!" every time he teed off.
Mashed potatoes.
Well, and he broke the racial barrier too, guys, with
right.
With what he
didn't break it. He didn't break it, but he smashed it.
He smashed it. Yeah, I mean, you already had black golfers, but nothing compared to the dominance of Tiger. And he became a worldwide sports figure. There's very few people who rise to that level in American sports. And you know, the 2019 Masters, we were all texting, I remember. Same thing as Eastlake. I guess I would say that was the culmination of the redemption tour, because when he won the Masters and he was able to share it with his kids in a way that he had not been able to share any other majors at Augusta, totally unexpected, getting another green jacket and getting that 15th major. I think that was truly one of the great American sports moments of this century, for sure. But, you know, certainly as far as I can remember, everybody remembers where they were that Sunday afternoon.
Pope, it was so good that I think last year when they played it in April, remember, because of COVID, they didn't play the Masters in April. Everyone knows that. But they replayed on Sunday the Tiger round.
Big ratings.
And I remember texting with all you guys then and having, you know, your heart rate was going. Like right. It was, you couldn't turn it off and you knew what was going to happen.
He's got to get up and down, guys.
Yeah. But I think history will maybe show it this way. I mean, a little bit of what I was alluding to and House, what you said. What athlete has had the ups and downs? I mean, the total dominant ups followed by the complete downfall of everything. And then to come all the way back to the pinnacle. And now, I mean, this guy's laying in a hospital bed right now with a long recovery. I mean, you know, he is a person and he's going to have a long recovery in front of him just to be able to get back to walk again. And I mean, you really look back, you're going to be hard pressed to find another athlete who had the highest of highs and the lowest of lows. And I think that that's part of why he will always be so revered.
Well, and you throw in the father figure part of the story, and you really have a tragic hero story where he's, you know, part of what hurt his career was his desire to do all this Army Ranger, Navy SEAL training stuff. And he hurt his knees and got too bulked up, you know, so he could be like his dad. His dad drove him so hard, which made him into the competitor he is, but it also may have, you know, led him off the path. I mean, he kept changing that swing after he hurt his knees and got all bulked up. I think it cost him a couple of majors.
Well, so here we are now, you know, we've got to figure, I mean, look, if we're not in the post-Tiger world and there's another chapter to write, I mean, whew, yeah, right. We'll all come back in 3 years and do another pod on it. But all right, here we are today. What's the PGA got? You know, I feel like we went through a stretch where there were these young, fit guys, the post-Tiger model of these, you know, guys who worked out, lifted weights, and they were all sort of right there and you were looking for rivalries. And in different ways, they all sort of flamed out. You know, I mean, some of them will win here and there, but what's the PGA got now to hang its hat on?
The PGA has got to be nervous as hell. I mean, you know, they negotiated I think it was a 10-year TV contract back when Tiger was coming back the first time in his mid-30s. And that's up, right? And now they've got, what do they have? They have a handful of guys maybe who had periods of brilliance but couldn't maintain it. They're never going to be Tiger. I'm talking about Rory and Jordan Spieth, guys like that. Even Koepka, you know, who I think is a dick. I don't like Koepka. You can like Rory, you can like Spieth.
Yeah, there it is.
But Koepka's a dick.
Made money on the over.
Yeah, you did. Yeah.
Then they've got this bunch of perfectly nice, good golfers who are just boring as hell. I mean,
Colin Morikawa, get excited. Do anything for you?
Does anyone get excited watching Justin Thomas or
even it pisses me off.
DJ or Rom?
Well, this is my point. This is my
DJ
point.
DJ and Koepka are just stiffs. They don't have no personality. No.
I mean, Morikawa, I'm glad he won. He's a nice guy, but I'm not going to be jumping up and down for Morikawa ever.
In the last 3 years, unless Tiger was in the leaderboard, I do not turn on the TV unless it's maybe a major. And maybe the major's close. But sometimes the major, somebody's just running away with it. What's the point? The PGA is either going to need a rivalry to get going. They're going to need a young gun with personality. I mean, the Bryson DeChambeau, because he's such a different player, is a little bit of an interesting story. But not really.
Not really.
Such a robot.
I mean, let me give you some names. Let me just throw some names out here of, you know, sort of the young guns, right? Well, we obviously talked about Morikawa, Victor Hovland.
No.
Matthew Wolf.
Maybe.
I like him.
Interesting.
Nice golf.
Sung J.M.
Pass.
Scotty Scheffler.
He's a Highland Park guy. He's boring.
Here, I got one for you. Homa.
Max Homa. No. Yeah, he's interesting.
He's a fun guy. He's a good dude.
Will Zalatoris?
Now he's supposed to be the future. He's another boring as hell. He's like Bernard Langer's personality.
Give me Andrew Beef Johnston or, you know, somebody like that.
We need John Daly to come back.
Yeah, then I'll turn on the TV.
The only other guy that I like actually like love and follow just as much as Tiger, not as much, was Fred Couples. He's like the only other guy in my that can get in that. He's just a likable dude.
Well, I think you felt like the same way about Phil.
Phil's gone on to greener pastures. He's going to dominate the senior tour for a while. He's not going to be competitive in any of the majors. Maybe Augusta once or twice, but
I think the immediate future of PGA golf is rooting against players like Patrick Reed. That's their best chance of good ratings because
maybe.
I mean, people
only Rooster can work the punchable face early on.
I hate that guy.
I can't.
Listen, I'll just say this to kind of wrap up Tiger, because I know today we're going to talk about the NBA, but. You know, we've celebrated, or I guess Milk celebrated Tom Brady, whatever. But
yeah, baby.
We talked about on these podcasts about the mental game. And I'm sure we'll talk a little bit today about, you know, Kobe and the Mamba mentality. Tiger is one of the few athletes I've ever seen that could rival Jordan or Kobe with that kind of – I mean, the mental game was just – incomparable. The best mental game I've ever seen in sports.
Absolutely. When he was at the top of his game, what young player would want to be in a playoff with him?
What player, period?
There was a stat at one point about the delta between Tiger, whoever he was playing with in a final round, and it was just like people just melted. If they had to play with him in the final round, it was like +7 or something like that.
God, who was the golfer he played in the U.S. Open? The old guy when he broke his leg, still won.
Rocco Mediate.
Rocco.
Yeah.
That was his
poor guy.
That was his last major before Masters 19. Yeah,
that's right. That's right. Well,
here's a Tiger.
Here's a Tiger.
Cheers, Tiger.
Tiger. I don't like him. Get better and we'll see you back out.
Last stat on Tiger. I looked this up when he was in the top five going into like a final round or the weekend or whatever, 150% increase in TV viewership compared. This is like 2018 after he'd come off like 3 years off compared to the year before. So talk about a huge problem that the PGA Tour has.
Sure. Listen, I'd rather watch Tiger's son play right now than most of these guys.
He's the only hope. So we'll see him in about 5 years.
A new hope.
Simba Woods. He is the hope.
Right. He'll be on tour at 12.
Yeah. Well, if we had sponsors, we could take a break right now and then move into the next segment, but we don't have sponsors, so we don't need to worry about that. How about the NBA guys? Anybody got any thoughts on NBA? We're getting close to the All-Star game. We got some midseason, you know, sort of right around there.
Trust the process.
Kyrie made some news this week.
Oh, you mean he doesn't believe the world's flat anymore?
Well, I think he might still, but.
Look, I have a lot to say about the NBA today.
How do you feel about the Tampa Bay Raptors?
Yeah.
Come on. Have you been to a game?
Look, you guys are very lucky we don't have a team, because we all know what would happen this year.
If Tampa Bay really mattered, then y'all would win it this year for the Raptors.
They're not our
that
team.
That would have that effect.
They're hanging out here for a few months.
Yeah, the Tampa Raptors are about as much their team as Tom Brady is their quarterback. But anyway, I digress.
Bryce Harper is to the Phillies.
You mean you're not hanging out with Siakam? You're not hanging out with Siakam at Gasparilla? Right.
So I actually think this year the NBA is at times unwatchable and at times just extremely exciting. I mean, you got these teams like your Wizards, Bison, Knicks, the Hornets, the Suns, the Jazz. I mean, you know, these teams have been bad for years and they're playing great. But on the other end of the spectrum, the replays are making these games unwatchable. You get to the end of the game and they've got 5 minutes delays while they look to see whose fingertip last touched the ball. And yet they can't figure out, you know, all these terrible flopping calls, and the guys are jumping, you know, guys running down on offense with his head down. Someone jumps in front of him and takes a charge at midcourt. I mean, that stuff has to end. Did you guys see that flop that LeBron did earlier this year against Memphis?
Yeah.
Where some guy went and like threw his hands back trying to get a rebound, and maybe his fingertip grazed Tiger's cheek, and Tiger does this delayed, like has been punched in the jaw so hard he's knocked out backwards flop, and they give him two shots at the free throw line. I mean, that part of the game to me is making it unwatchable. They need fix the replays and the flopping. It's become like a Euro soccer game at times.
Well, I'll give credit to the NBA. Notwithstanding the flop problem, it is taking over in the world. Just behind soccer is the most popular sport, despite no Jordan, despite no Kobe. Yes, they have LeBron, but I think it's a game of superstars. And I think it's a game where you need 2 to 3 superstars to win, which is why, you know, in terms of looking forward to the playoffs this year, we can scratch off teams that don't have 2 or 3 superstars, which means there's going to be some movement here coming up. But here's my mid-season awards. For MVP, I think it's really going to be a great race this year. You have 5 guys who are really standing out. Of course, you have LeBron. He's having another great year. Steph Curry has put the team on his back. He's back from his injury. He's been incredible. The most underrated and quiet player that not enough people know about is Damian Lillard, who's having an incredible season at Portland. And then you've got part of the future, the next Dirk, Luka Doncic, and my guy, the process, Joel Embiid, who is defying the role of the big man. So I think it's really a 5-man race. However, with all of that, I think there's another guy in there that's going to surpass them all, maybe, which you wouldn't think about. But Nikola Jokic, on Denver, his numbers are unbelievable. I mean, the guy is actually 4th in the NBA in steals, believe it or not.
Yep.
Look
at his assists.
He's 8.5 assists per game. I mean, he is dominating. And I think at the end of the year, if those two teams continue to do well, it's going to be Embiid versus Jokic. Bradley Beal, I think your team, Bison, mark it down. They're making the playoffs.
Well, I'll tell you, you don't want to play them in that play-in tournament. That's for sure.
they're on fire.
They are on fire. They just beat, and they should have beaten the Celtics last night.
Yeah.
They beat Denver. They beat the Jazz. They beat the Lakers, right?
Yeah. They beat the Celtics on that trip too.
Yeah. I mean, they've beaten some great teams in the last six games.
Yeah. I think the
Bradley Beal leads in scoring. Yeah.
They lost to the Celtics. Yeah. They lost to the Celtics last night because Beal slipped on a puddle of sweat and lost the ball out of bounds. Otherwise, they had that game.
Right, right.
But that trade is turning out, actually starting to work out pretty well for them. Westbrook's playing great. Beal's leading the league in scoring with almost 33 points. But I think we all need to talk about
Julius Randle.
Well, he's very impressive. The Knicks are – it's impressive. He'll be most improved player this year, Randle. I'm pretty sure about that. But we talk about superstars make the team. Can we talk about the Brooklyn Nets since Pope called it? Since Pope called it, right?
Yeah, Pope called it.
Nobody else saw it coming.
Yeah, Pope went out on a limb.
Pope Sardamas got that once again.
Yeah.
Harden's playing point guard, and they're – that team is just rolling.
But you know what's so interesting about the NBA though is, you know, kind of to your point, Toby, like you have to have superstars, right? But there's not a lot of different superstars who have won because you've had such dominance by a couple guys, by a couple teams, right? I mean, LeBron shut off pretty much anybody from the East winning for, you know, a good, 10 years. Cause he was the only guy in the East getting into the finals. And then you look back, you know, you had Golden State was dominant there for a little, I mean, it's just, you look at the guys who are the superstars right now, the guys who Toby, you just talked about as MVP candidates, and they don't have any titles, right? Other than, you know, you take LeBron out of the mix.
Well, Curry.
Yeah, that's true. Curry does.
You didn't mention Giannis in the MVP discussion.
I think some shine is wearing off.
Yeah, you got a little disappointment, right?
But hasn't the NBA always scored like 35 the last six, seven games? Hasn't the NBA always been like this? I mean, as someone who knows very little, I mean, isn't there always like one, two, or three teams dominating? There's like the Lakers, the Celtics, the Bulls, you know.
Yeah, I mean.
Spurs,
yeah.
I think parity's hitting the NBA this
four
year.
Four titles.
Though.
Yeah.
The Heat, the Cavs. The answer is no, you're wrong.
Right.
Yeah, and Milk, since you know so much about the NBA, Milk, do you know who's leading the Western Conference right now? If you thought it was the Lakers, you would be wrong.
I'm taking the under on this.
Their team has been mentioned already.
You can't look it up fast enough.
I'm not even sure that you would know this is a state in the United States.
who is leading?
The Utah Jazz.
Utah Jazz.
Ooh, interesting.
And they are rolling.
Donovan Mitchell.
You know what you don't have? You don't have teams, and I'm sure as soon as I say this, somebody's going to throw out a team. I mean, Brooklyn is the only one, I think, with three superstars, right? Like LeBron went to Miami and started the, we got to have three guys here, you know, superstar, super team kind of thing. And then Golden State followed that at one point. And, you know, you kind of had a brief history, but where you had three superstars all trying to get together on the same team. We're sort of at a point where teams are running with two, right? They're running with two guys. And I think that helps with
except
the parity
for my Nets.
A little bit. Except for the Nets. That's right.
Your Nets.
Yeah.
That's Pope's latest team.
Yeah. What happened to your Mavs?
They'll be there.
Oh, okay.
Do you think so, Pope?
I can't stand the Nets. I'm just saying my Nets because I'm on.
Porzingis is going to be gone in the next week or two.
I am a little worried about that.
But Pope is going to have a Brooklyn hat on next week.
Yeah, he is. Yeah.
Because he has a great uncle who
ordering
passed
it
through Brooklyn.
Right. Yeah.
He's going to Amazon right now.
Yeah.
You know,
I hate Harden. I can't tell you how much I hate Harden.
for all the angst that Stephen A. and Spike Lee had, and how badly the Knicks screwed things up, and how they really got screwed out of the number one pick, they're a pleasant surprise in the NBA this year. Rooster, I mean, they're above 500, and they actually have an entertaining team.
I can't believe it. I honestly can't believe it. Last year, they won a total of 17 games. Wow. Right now, they're 18-17. And they don't have one superstar, let alone three. They have a guy who had all kinds of potential on the Lakers, and they let him go because he would, like, get up ahead of steam and dribble into three defenders and lose the ball. Random. And then make a great play and then lose the ball. And I think Thibodeau is the answer. I think Tom Thibodeau has done a great job teaching Julius Randle and this rookie Quigley to play on an NBA team. And he's got the team doing the opposite of what the Celtics do. They pass the ball around. They have a movement offense, and they play tough defense. Now, the Celtics play good defense. They are the worst passing team in the NBA. They, you know, I was listening to Brian Scalabrine talking about this the other day. He was talking about this stat for wide open looks. Celtics are 27th or 8th in the league in wide open looks. They specialize in Jason Tatum taking the most difficult shot he could possibly take. And he's so good, they go in a lot. But if you got a wide open look, then those are going in a lot more. And the Knicks are just playing solid, solid defense, ball movement offense. And, you know, Toby, you and I talked earlier this year about how Obi was going to be the only thing we had to cheer for in New York. The last time the Knicks had anything like this to cheer for in Madison Square Garden was Linsanity. That's how long it's been.
Oh, my God.
And that was short-lived. But Obi is scoring 2 or 4 points a game. He's playing like sometimes 4 minutes a game. He can't even crack the lineup. Austin Rivers is a coach's choice. Do not play most nights. You know, Tom Thibodeau has this core group of young players that he's molded into the way he likes to play hard-nosed defense and unselfish offense. And it's working there right now. If the playoffs started, they'd have home court advantage in the first round. Can you imagine that? I mean, I'm not kidding myself. I don't think the Knicks are going to even make the playoffs in the end, but God, this has been a nice turnaround.
Is the East parity or is it just mediocrity? Because the Knicks are one game from being out of the playoffs. They're at 4.5 games back, and the eighth team is 5.5 games back, and the ninth team is 6 games back. I mean, you have five teams that are all at 500 in the East. And if you look at the comparable team in the West to the Knicks, it's the Suns, and they're 22-11.
Well,
and the Mavs right now are 500, and they would be in the playoffs, number 5 slot in the East. So,
right.
Mm-hmm. You know,
if the Knicks were in the East Southeast division, the Wizards division, they'd be in first place. So, yes, the East is terrible.
Well, I'll say this about the home court advantage. It's going to be fun to see, other than Florida and its super spreader environment in the Super Bowl. The NBA is going to be the first league where we're going to see again post-COVID some home court advantage in the playoffs, because I think now we're going to start to see these stadiums allowing, you know, 25-35%. And I think it could make a difference for some of these teams in the playoffs. It'd be interesting to see, to hear even 30% full, to hear Madison Square Garden rocking.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think we want to talk a little bit about the Sixers, though. I mean, we can't do this segment without talking about them, because I know, Toby, you're pretty excited about them. Got a lot of reasons to be, and we should get it on the record so that when they crash down and fail miserably in the playoffs, we can go back to this and have recorded the joy and excitement that you had. So,
well, the good news is the Celtics aren't good this year, so that gives the Sixers at least one round in the playoffs.
We're 4 bounces away from 1 championship, thanks to the Tampa Bay Raptors. And Embiid is healthy. He shed some weight. He in the offseason, he lifted weights. He's a monster. He's been dominating the best centers in the game this year. Ben Simmons is really starting to come on. His offensive game too. He's the best defender. I think he could get best, the defensive player of the year.
He's like Deion Sanders in his prime. He's a shutdown guard. I mean, he neutralized Doncic the other night. I was stunned.
Yeah, he could get defense. Yeah, he could get defensive player of the year.
I agree with that. I think Gobert gets it because everyone thinks he's the best, but Ben Simmons is the most versatile. I mean, he can guard one night, he can guard LeBron, and the next night guard Dame Lillard. I mean, his versatility is amazing.
And he's got his attitude on defense. He is all over defense. He's probably the most excited defensive player I've seen since Rodman.
He's really great defensively, but they are still searching in replacement of JJ Redick. They thought it was Seth Curry. He was shooting 50%, then got COVID, and then he's shooting like 15-20%. Danny Green is just too long in the tooth. I think to really excel in the NBA playoffs, you need that inside outside game, and you've got to have that legit 3-point shooter, and we're still missing it. So
Seth Curry's 47% from the 3-point line.
I bet you that number's dropped. Lovely.
That was from the Sunday stats.
Really?
Yeah.
He was off for the last couple of games post COVID. Maybe he'll get his groove back.
What about your namesake? Isn't he a good
Toby? Toby, trust in Toby. He's out right now with a leg injury. But you know, if you've got a Toby on your team, you're a winner.
Right. So I am with you on Embiid. I think it's kind of interesting that when Charles Barkley and Shaq did that interview with him in the last season and said, "Hey man, you got to start learning playing the post and dominating down low and being a big man and stop all this hanging out on the 3-point line and you need to get yourself in shape." I think he took that to heart a little bit and it shows. But if he doesn't win the MVP this year, it's going to be because he lapses back into that. And I said this to you earlier in the week. I saw shades of that in the Houston Rockets game where the Sixers are up by 29 at the half and the Rockets have like nobody on their team right now than John Wall. And John Wall single-handedly brought them back in the second half to within 5, maybe 3 points. And during that whole stretch, Embiid was sort of like slumbering down the court on offense and stopping at the 3-point line, waiting to take a difficult shot. If he gets down in the post, Houston can't do anything with him. There's nothing they can do to guard him other than double and triple team him. Then he kicks out to Seth Curry for an open, wide open 3-pointer.
I agree. I agree.
If he plays like that, you're hard to beat.
We lost an embarrassing game this weekend to Cleveland, who's our kryptonite. And the reason the Sixers lost is because the easy play was to give it to Embiid in the post, let him get up, get fouled, where he's great from the free throw line, but he wouldn't do it. But it'll be interesting. I think the NBA will be a fun second half. I do think there's a lot of parity. And, you know, it'll be good to see fans in the seats. But what I want to ask all you guys is, relative to the NBA, is should the NBA change its logo at the suggestion of Kyrie Irving?
Well, I don't think they should do anything at the suggestion of Kyrie Irving. but Milk, you go ahead.
Jerry West doesn't want to even be the logo anymore, right? Like he's not
well,
even.
Well, first of all, he doesn't even, you know, they've never actually claimed and said,
but we know
it is him. Now he says it's him, and yeah, he is a little uncomfortable with it, but the NBA has never actually said, "Oh yeah, that's right. Jerry."
Right. So,
I think it's time to move on from Jerry. I do. I don't think that Kyrie Irving should be leading this conversation. And if we're going to move on from Jerry, I don't think it should be Kobe Bryant. I totally agree with, well, I agree in part with the article in the Post yesterday by Kevin Blackstone, who he said it's not time to move on from Jerry. I disagree with that. But he said that Kobe's, if we do move on, Kobe's not the guy. And I agree for the reasons I told you guys the other day. Look, you either believe or you don't believe that Kobe raped that woman in Denver. And if you believe that, how can you want him to be the logo of the league in perpetuity. You just can't. And, you know, I don't want to relitigate that case, but I think there's a good case to be made that, first of all, he admitted to having sex with her. It's not like he's like saying, no, no, I would never met that woman. He admits he had sex with her. She had scratches all over her, and his legal team, you know, bullied her and paid her a boatload of money secretly and bought her off. Now, is that the guy you want to be the logo forever of the NBA, or at least for as long as Jerry West was? Not me. I'd rather have Dr. J doing the hand in the air dunk, or Kareem doing the skyhook, or the Big O doing the jump shot, or Seth Curry or Steph Curry doing his jump shot. One of those people. But not, you know, Kobe was a great, great, amazing player. And until that incident, was one of my favorite players. But he's not the face of the league. He shouldn't be the face of the league. What Bill is Russell.
What's the backdrop here? Why do they want to change the logo?
The backdrop is the logo's been around since 1969. The NBA,
it's kind of iconic.
It is iconic. The NBA is now 75% black in terms of the players. And the question is, does the logo, if assuming it is Jerry West, does the logo reflect really what is the NBA player, which in and of itself is a tough question to ask. And I listen, I'm against the whole idolization and make a statue of somebody. You know, like, what are you going to do? You're going to make it Wilt Chamberlain, who says he slept with 20,000 women? You know, like, it's really, really hard to say we're going to. And by the way, besides that just smooth, silky basketball move that is the logo today, other than Michael Jordan's Jumpman, who really does have an iconic play that is so memorable that I guess Kareem. It could be the Kareem Skyhook.
Iverson stepping over Ty Lue.
Is that a logo? I love that.
That's what it should be.
Or how about Stan Van Gundy hanging on to the ankles of Alonzo?
How about Latrell Sprewell choking PJ Carlissimo? The Jumpman's iconic.
I mean, if you're gonna go there,
it is.
But it's not exactly cutting edge. It's not new. I mean, he did that in like 84.
But it's also on sports apparel for teams outside the NBA, isn't it? I mean, I think the Jumpman logo you see on other logos. It doesn't belong to the NBA anymore.
It's a brand.
The problem with changing
logo, the current logo looks like an old dude doing a set shot. About to do a set shot. It's not even the way the game is played anymore.
Well, that's true.
But then the question is a logo, I mean, it could be, is a logo supposed to be changing with the time? Is it supposed to be another new player in 30, 40 years from now?
Right. You're setting
That's the problem. I mean, then they say, oh, well, Kobe was great. There's going to be a bunch of us guys sitting around and doing the whatever Tuesday morning quarterbacks. And they're going to say like, yeah, that Kobe guy, who remembers him? Let's go with this new guy. Like, you know,
well, that's Kevin Blackstone's point in his piece is don't need to change it. But if you're going to, shouldn't be Kobe.
Right.
Maybe he's right.
Yeah. I agree.
What's your vote? Change or no change? Bison?
I'm going to go with change.
Rooster?
I'm going to go with change.
Milk?
I say no change.
Not surprised.
Pope?
Change to Jumpman or leave it alone.
Also not surprising.
Don't go changing to try to please me.
House breaks the tie.
So we got Laura Ingraham and Milk on one side.
That's too good.
All right. Well, I guess we got plenty more on the NBA coming up. We'll be talking more NBA on the pod in the upcoming weeks.
The LeBrons versus the KDs, man, can't wait.
Yeah. Well,
who do you have in the championship?
Right now?
Yeah, who do you think's going to be in?
I'm going Lakers.
Wow.
And I'm going to do it. This is going to be painful.
Wow.
But I'm going to say Sixers.
Wow.
I'm with you, assuming AD doesn't really have an Achilles that's about to snap.
Yeah.
Midseason, I'm going Jazz Nets.
I think LeBron is really, really tough in the playoffs. If AD is healthy, I'm going with Lakers. And unless the Sixers add a piece at the deadline, I unfortunately am going to go with the Nets. I think these three are going to gel, and I think they're going to be really tough to beat. I do think the East Championship will be the Sixers Nets. I think it's going to be amazing. But if I had to predict it, I'd say Lakers Nets. And I think the Nets take them. I think the Nets could be champions.
Yep.
Oh, okay.
Pope called it.
Milk, what do you got? Milk, who do you got? Come on, we'll give you a vote, even though you don't know anything.
I'll go with the Celtics Lakers. Are they still good? Are the Chicago Bulls still good?
Yes. Put all your money on the Bulls.
Yes. Red Auerbach versus.
Yeah. Yeah.
I would actually watch a Lakers. I kind of am very intrigued by a Lakers Sixers final. That seems throwback. Different and kind of different.
Yeah.
Good. Although the Nets would be kind of cool too.
Do you think Dr. J would be
analysis milk.
Available? Milk?
Is Michael Jordan still playing?
All right. Well, that brings us to Punchable Face of the Week.
It's this week's Punchable Face.
And it's actually my turn.
Woohoo! Oh, wow. We've been waiting six long weeks for this.
There's kind of an obvious one, and I'm going to get to it. But before I do that, I do want to take a little liberty and just mention that this guy, I don't know if you all know this guy, Seth John. Have you heard of this? The soccer, I guess the Women's Soccer League or the National U.S. Soccer Federation, whatever that body is, had a vote on kneeling during the anthem. They had a policy in place that you couldn't kneel, and then they undid it last summer, and then they kind of had a vote where they were going to put it back in place. And a guy who's a former captain of the national 7-a-side team, he's a Paralympian, his name's Seth John, and he just went on like a 7-minute rant that was like denying the effects of slavery and, you know, denying the existence of police brutality. And it's just not a good look at this point. I mean, look, if you're going to stand up and make a rant and deny that slavery was like, you know, important to the economic development of the United States and like pretend that isn't actually a historical fact, you definitely should get punched in the face. I mean, this guy should have been punched in the face. He's lucky this was over Zoom and nobody was there to punch him in the face because he certainly took a beating in the press afterwards. But look, that's not really the most obvious one this week. I think as a rule of thumb, when you're a soccer player and you decide to call out arguably the greatest NBA basketball player of all time, you just are begging to get punched in the face. I mean, so this guy, Zlatan, I'm not even going to try and say his last name because I'll butcher it. Toby, you want to give it to us?
Ibrahimovic. Ibrahimovic.
Who is clearly had an outstanding career in soccer, just decided to take on LeBron and his political stances. And the quote was, you know, he said, look, he's phenomenal at what he's doing. But then he had to go on and say, I don't like when people have some kind of status. They go and do politics at the same time. Do what you're good at. Do the category you do. I play football because I'm the best at playing football. I don't do politics. Blah, 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 so on, so on. You've heard it. Shut up and dribble.
Shut up and dribble, Laura Ingraham.
Right. Shut up and dribble. And, you know, You're a soccer player. Why are you taking on LeBron? What are you doing? Just on that alone, that's my punchable face of the week, let alone the fact that, damn it, it's good when athletes stand up for a position and take a stand on something. And that doesn't even mean we have to agree with them. But when they stand up and LeBron said it, he said, you know, I'm not really, you know, ill-informed when I open my mouth and say something. And he is a pretty thoughtful guy. You know, he's, when you got a person like LeBron, who every time he opens his mouth, there's a microphone in front of him, he's going to say some dumb stuff here and there. That there's no way around that. We all do. But this guy is pretty thoughtful about what he stands up for, what he fights for. And it's just stupid. Why are athletes taking on other athletes who want to stand up and make change, make positive change in the world? So Zlatan, shut up, and you're the punchable face of the week.
No scalpel.
Yeah, we'll save that.
Good one. Good one.
Why does he keep calling it football? That's what I'm most offended by.
Wow.
Yeah. Fair point.
I think it's football.
God.
Football. So. Well, we got a little bit of
did you hear LeBron's comeback, though? I thought it was very poignant. He said, look, I started this school for underprivileged kids, and many of them don't have their own voice. And for hundreds of them, I am their voice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, that was pretty powerful.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. So, well, we've got a little bit of a special segment we want to do today. And I think we're going to kick it off with Rooster. You're going to lead this off, aren't you?
Yeah, hold on, though. We're going to pour one out, and I'm out. I got to give myself a little hit here.
Wow, this is interesting.
Yeah. Okay.
And to our listeners, he's drinking Gatorade.
Sponsored by Gatorade.
Sponsored by Old Forester, 1897. So we had the sad passing of Irv Cross the other day at age 81. And I felt like we needed to pour one out for Irv Cross. He was a real trailblazer and part of, you know, at least three of our childhoods. You know, the guy was a Pro Bowl football player for the Eagles and the Rams, but that's not what he's known for. In 1971, he joined the NFL Today crew, which was the sports show of our childhood. And that's what I remember him for. I don't remember him as being the pioneer black broadcaster. I was a child. I remembered him as being my favorite guy on the NFL Today. And that's why I guess he is a trailblazer, because
not Phyllis George
for the black athletes who turned to journalism and broadcasting after they retired, he made the transition seamless for them. Nobody blinked after that because Irv Cross was so damn good at it. And people just loved him. I mean, he was the classiest guy on TV, especially when you juxtapose him with Jimmy the Greek on the same show, right? I mean, he just was a classy gentleman who knew his stuff. And you just loved the guy. And I mean, I love that show. I was sad to see it go. We could use a show like that now on Sundays instead of some of the nonsense we have to endure before the game starts. Here's you, Irv Cross. Pour one out for
Irv. Pour one out for Irv.
He was the best.
Milk. Well, and if you guys
Google him,
if you guys can see my virtual background to our listeners, it is a picture of my beloved golden retriever Franklin, who passed a couple of weeks ago and crossed the Rainbow Bridge. And I just wanted to pour one out to him. You know, he was named by my wife and I after Franklin Street, where Tar Heels go and celebrate national championships. And you know, the best friend a guy could ever have. My wife got him a jersey that he would wear for the Carolina basketball games. And I'm going to miss my buddy watching games with him and enjoying Carolina wins. And hopefully he has found some good friends across the Rainbow Bridge. And I'm pour one out to our beloved Golden Franklin.
Love you, Franklin.
Franklin.
Woo!
See you guys next week.
All right, guys.
So next week, can we discuss the fact that Pope is wearing an Alabama vest while he says all of this?
We'll have to have our own
episode. I wasn't going to say anything, Rooster.
We'll have to have a special episode explaining Pope's loyalties.
Take an entire pod.
I think that's at least a segment.
All right. Good week, guys.
All right, guys. Take it easy. See you.
Love you guys.
Take care, guys.